Pure Dog Talk is the voice of purebred dogs. We talk to the legends of the sport and give you the tips and tools to create an awesome life with your purebred dog. From showing to preservation breeding, from competitive obedience to field work, from agility to therapy dogs, and all the fun in between, your passion is our purpose. All right, you guys, welcome to Pure Dog Talk. I am your host, Laura Reeves, and I'm back with friend of the pod, Bobby Brian Lewis. I'm going to start calling you BB, man.
I know. That was my nickname growing up. So
I'm telling you, I'm all about it. I got me some BB here. And so he emailed me the other day and he's like, I can't believe, why are people so mad? I'm showing them how the litters get raised and are socializing and blah. And I'm like, well, I mean, this is a conversation, so let's have it. All right, you guys, did you know that September is National Pet Insurance Month? What? If you're not already sending your litters home with Trupanion's Go Home Day offer, now is the perfect time to start. As a member of Trupanion's Breeder Support Program, you can give your buyers exclusive access to their special offer for immediate pet medical insurance coverage. Protection starts the moment the offer is activated, keeping your puppies covered as they settle into their new homes. You know that puppies have a knack for mischief. In fact, Trupanion claims data shows that nearly one in two puppies need unexpected care before their first birthday. But with Trupanion and their exclusive Go Home Day offer, you can rest easy knowing pets are protected for whatever trouble they may find in their new home. Plus, Trupanion can pay their portion of the bill directly to veterinary hospitals at checkout, so owners can say yes to the care their pet needs without having to worry about the cost or waiting for a reimbursement check. When you join Trupanion's Breeder Support Program, not only will you unlock this special offer for your buyers, you'll gain insight into your litter's health with free reporting to help you support the long-term health of your lines. You'll also enjoy educational resources to share with your buyers, personalized support, and more. Even better, the program is completely free for breeders. Join Trupanion's Breeder Support Program today at trupanion.com/puredogtalk. Trupanion is underwritten in Canada by Accelerant Insurance Company of Canada, or GPIC Insurance Company, and in the United States by American Pet Insurance Company, or ZPIC Insurance Company. All right, crew, I am super excited to introduce the Better Breeder Certification Program from the Better Breeder Institute. This program recognizes purposeful dog breeders dedicated to the preservation and advancement of their breeds. Conservation dog breeders have long struggled to differentiate themselves from backyard, for-profit, and commercial breeders in the minds of the general public. This program was developed to help purebred puppy buyers identify better breeders. The Better Breeder Institute certifies breeders who produce healthy, beautiful, and predictable puppies bred to the breed standard, and who raise the bar with their breeding and business practices. Certified breeders can save hundreds of dollars annually with exclusive discounts from leading brands in the dog industry. Plus, this program directly contributes to breed health research and is the only breeder merit program created to support efforts to breed a better dog. To apply, go to betterbreeder.org/certify. betterbreeder.org/certify. Check it out, y'all. So tell me what you ran into, and then let's talk through how you managed it, because I think this is a real life thing for all of us that breed dogs.
Yeah, I mean, I was telling you, I had started a YouTube channel a couple of months ago, and I think when we had first done our first podcast, and I didn't even want to share it because I had already had so much negative because I was just sharing out my puppies, and anybody that was on the waiting list, it was kind of a chance for them to see puppies in the litter. I wasn't trying to sell puppies. We have a wait list before we ever have a litter. We plan those litters, and normally we have 5 or 6 paid people on a wait list before we ever have puppies. And I was putting it on YouTube live, and I had so much hate. I mean, it was breeders suck, shut down puppy mills. There's too many puppies in the world now. Why are you doing this for? And there was a lot of great comments too, but those were actually overshadowing the positive. And I was just trying to show how the puppies should be raised. We're raising them inside. We've got bumpers on our weapon boxes, and how you don't need to have a lot of material in there when the puppies are little, because they'll get tangled up in it and blah, blah, blah. And it was just so much hate for breeding dogs. And I was shocked at how much.
You know, and it's so interesting. And I mentioned this earlier, but I just did the interview with a New York Times bestselling author who's written a novel, a fictional novel about a dog breeder. And I asked him, I'm like, Oprah's not going to ask you this one, but I'm curious, you know, how do you handle the backlash from people that are negatively associated with dog breeding? He's like, I've never even heard that. And I'm thinking, wow, okay, we have a communication disconnect somewhere between us as dog breeders and a New York Times bestseller. I mean, the guy's selling millions of copies of this book that's about a dog breeder and has never gotten anti-dog breeder hate. Right. So one of the things that I found really, really interesting about the conversation that I had with him was how he framed this character in the book and what the character was doing by breeding dogs. And it was so fascinating. It was basically phrased as, you know, this amazing project, like I'm trying to make a beautiful thing in the world. And I wonder, do we as dog breeders get so much hate that we just pull inside and close up shop, and then nobody hears this passion, right? And this vision that we bring. So talk to me about that.
That's kind of what I did when the person was commenting. The easiest thing would have been to click on them and remove them from the channel. I mean, that would have been the best thing. I don't know if that'd be the best thing to do, but that would have been an easy fix to the situation. Right. I could have eliminated the problem and I could have went on. But I was trying to explain to them, this is what we do. We do all the health testing on our parents. They must be at least 2 years old and have all their health certs before we breed them. And normally we like to even have a title on all of them before we do this and blah, 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 blah. And we're constantly thinking about trying to stay within standard for our Brittany's and those type of things. And we're also looking for a great disposition and those type of things. And he was going, just because he does a health test, he thinks that we should just let him do whatever he wants to do. And I was just like, what? No, that's not what I'm saying. I'm saying that we're screening everything, and all of our puppies, before they go somewhere, they have to fill that application out. I Facebook them. I mean, you know what I mean?
Yeah, I know. Totally.
Checking out everything about them. And then they have to fill out questionnaires and those type of things. And so it was just very alarming to me how much negativity. And I'm going to speak from my aspect of the Brittany world. We have enough hate in the sport sometimes that we don't need any outside hate to go on that. I mean, sometimes you can get a squabble between people that are having the same dog breed. You know what I mean? Like, you're not doing it the way I would do it. So I'm
going to live it, man.
I can imagine. I mean, I've been doing Brittany since 91, but I haven't really been in the show world. And since I've gotten in the show world, it is, you see different groups, you know what I mean? Those type of things. So we don't need any other outside people bashing us, you know?
Right. Well, and I think where I would flip that is we get so many strays from John Q. Public. Like, let's make a united you stand and divided you fall sort of mentality within our sport. Like, we don't need to be pitching strays at responsible dog breeders in our community. We get enough of that. Right. So putting that united front. And I think, you know, what you're talking about, the education, what this fellow, the author that I was talking about, describing the vision. And so that just touched a really core part for me. So talk to me about, as you were talking to these people, ways in which you were able to explain your vision right? Like, let's give our listener community some ideas, right? Like, be brave, put yourself out there. And yeah, you're going to catch strays, but this is how you handle it.
Yeah, I mean, for me, it was just trying to explain to them that we're going through a whole procedure before the dog ever makes it there. And to be honest with you, I've had a lot of dogs that never made it. I mean, they never made it to that point where they were able to have puppies or even be a sled dog or whatever. And they might have failed out in their hip testing or something like that. Or to me, even a fair hip is a questionable one for me, even though it's a pass. It still is questionable when I have so many other qualities. Mm-hmm. And, you know, if it was an exceptional dog, maybe a fair would still be good for me. I've heard several people say that, and I agree with that totally.
In my breeding program, in wire hair pointers. Now, that's different in other breeds, so I think that's important to make sure that we're clear about this. A fair in a Clumber Spaniel is like the Holy Grail, right?
Thank God.
And a fair in a wire hair pointer is like, wah. And I've bred them twice, because there was so much else about the dog that I wanted, pedigree or whatever piece that I wanted. And I was like, okay, breaking my rule. I was only going to breed good and excellent. That's another thing that, you know, we can talk about your progress as a breeder, right? Like where you start. I am never. Yeah, well, I've never so many times. The fairs I bred didn't give me what I wanted. So then I was like, okay, I was right. I'm going to stay away from that. But you can only know by trying.
Yeah. I mean, that's like me. I bought several dogs from top breeders in the country trying to add to my, and two or three of those dogs didn't pass their hips. And I was like, man, how did they not pass their hips when they came from too good? You know what I mean? And those type of things. So I started going more to pin hips and then doing also OFA, but the pin hips were more reliable for me.
You know, and fascinating. How is it you're pulling every conversation I've had this week into this one? I just interviewed a vet who is a veterinarian who's also a breeder, talking about pin hip as a really objective versus subjective way to increase our hip scores. It was fascinating. So interesting that you added that to it.
Yeah. I'm going to tell you my story. I was devastated at two females I had. I mean, they were 17, 18 months. We had done a preliminary eyes. We had done patellas, cardiac, some basic cardiac. And all we were waiting were those hips. And I mean, these dogs were fine hunting dogs. I mean, I had already got them into the hunting program and everything. And then when we did those hips at 2 years and they came back as mild, I was just like, it must be wrong. I'll wait. Right. I'll wait 4 months and do it again. You know what I mean? It can't be
bad
right.
Bad positioning. You know? It's got to be bad positioning.
Yeah. Those type of things. So it's devastating. I mean, because you've put 2 years into these dogs a lot of times.
I know.
And some of them had already been in a show ring, you know what I mean? And ate up several shows and done certain things in there. And you know the money that's involved in that. And then
that's one of the reasons I do like pin hip, is that early warning system I think is really valuable. So as you continued with your YouTube channel, how did that conversation progress or change or improve or not?
It improved. I think I was trying to explain to them a little bit more of what we do, the procedures we go through, that we just didn't find two dogs on the street and start having puppies. And then we just lucked up and we had great puppies. We had one of the breedings we do is a repeat breeding that we've had several great puppies come out of and those type of things. And then just trying to explain them all the preparation that is in place to have this litter of puppies.
Right.
And then nothing wrong with people that might raise puppies outside with a female. I was like, you know, to me, that's a big no-no sometimes, depending on the weather and, you know, blah, blah, blah. And then finally I had people going, this guy's really working at this. He's really trying to do something here. And they were kind of helping, supporting in the conversation. And then finally they were like, hey, go ahead and leave, man. I mean, if you're not going to listen, you're throwing one-liners every time. You're not really listening to what he's saying here. And I was like, you know, we support the American Brittany Rescue. You know what I mean? I mean, we donate to that every year. Yeah. And he's going, just because you donate money doesn't mean you aren't part of the problem. And I'm like, I'm not saying that. I'm saying we're trying to help the best we can. And I guess I could have fired back and say, well, how much money have you donated to, you know, shelters or the Humane Society? You know what I mean? I mean, you could have been negative that way, but everything was kind of positive. And then three nights, four nights in, you know, skipping nights and doing another one, more and more people. I mean, one night I had 78,000 views.
Oh, my gosh.
On
that's
YouTube
amazing. Live. Good job.
We're just hoping, I guess it's kind of got to me now to where it's just kind of you're trying to share. And the first question I get, are these puppies for sale? No, they're not. If I have to sell puppies on YouTube Live, I'm in trouble.
You know what I mean? Yeah, that's going to be like, these are not puppies you're going to find on Craigslist, y'all.
Right.
Hang tight, guys. Got a little bit of information for you. We'll be right back to the podcast in a minute. Purina is excited to tell you about the new My Purina app that lets you share with your puppy buyers. Using the app, pet owners can shop, earn points, and get rewarded for their purchases. Here's how it works. Pet owners download the My Purina app from the Apple App Store or Google Play Store on their mobile device. They also can sign up for an account and access the program's features online by visiting purina.com/mypurina-app. When pet owners buy everyday pet supplies like treats and ProPlan puppy and dog food, they can scan the receipts to earn rewards. Dog toys, food coupons, tote bags, bag dispensers, smart ID pet tags, and training clickers are just some of the great items available. The My Purina app supports puppy buyers and rewards them for being a super pet parent. They can find the formula that suits their pet's unique needs and explore the train and play content library for a bonding experience with their pet. Encourage your clients to join the app that brings pets and the Purina passion together. My Purina, where you shop, earn, and get rewarded. All right, you guys, I know I've been talking about this a lot, but I just want to make sure everybody hears about it. I know every pet owner out there has questions about their pet's health. The Marty and Laura Show is here to help. Hosted by Dr. Marty and I, the new podcast delivers fun, fact-based conversations about all things pet health. Whether it's a runny puppy nose or a kitty cough. This show is really designed for your puppy buyers, for your friends, for your non-dog folks in your life. You know, your cousins, uncles, brothers, girlfriend. So feel free to share this on. We encourage you to use this as a great resource for the non-dog people in your life. Talk on. What I am saying to listener land is, here's a guy who's put himself out there. You know, my friend BB's putting himself out there. And these are some tips and some tools and what you might expect to have happen and ways that you can work with it. And so that, to me, we can't expect these people to be educated by osmosis. And it's kind of like what we talked about when we were talking about the legislators. We need to establish ourselves as subject matter experts. And in today's society, one of the ways you do that is to have a huge YouTube following, right? Right.
Well, that's like me. We're licensed through our state. I mean, we're a certified pet breeder because they said, as I was talking to someone, I was like, well, that might be something else I can do to get credentials, you know what I mean, to get street credit. I mean, nothing against anyone else who's not doing that. But to me, to a certain degree, you feel like you've got to prove yourself a lot of times. I could have ran away from the conversation and went and hid and still did my puppies and still do all my other things and hid away and not faced it. And I'm not saying I did anything special, but what I'm saying is that I could have hid that way. And I think a lot of breeders do that.
Well, because it's a lot. Right? Like people don't want to take it and I don't want to take the heat. Now, I mean, God knows I've taken heat on this podcast. I've caught my strays. So I understand it. I truly do. But my encouragement is to say, here's an example of someone, just a guy breeding his dogs, doing the right thing and using that as an opportunity to educate and tell the story about the people that they didn't know that the dams cleaned the puppies.
it was going to start out being something fun that we could put on there. Any of our people that had deposits or had a puppy application approved, they got to see the puppies. And it was a way of doing that.
Yeah.
At first, I was just going to leave the camera running for 40 minutes. Mm-hmm. And then I started getting questions in. What's the mom doing? Mm-hmm. I'm going, she's cleaning the puppies. What do you mean she's cleaning the puppies? I was like, she's helping them go to the bathroom because they're mm-hmm. 4 days old. Do you know what I mean? And they right. were like, what? I didn't even realize that. And why is she nursing this way? And why is she standing up nursing now at 4 weeks? And I'm like, well, think about it. You've got 5 or 6, 7, 8 babies hanging on you. You want to stand up because they're not laying on you inside the whelping box anymore. And I said, it gets very hot. And somebody was like, well, she's thirsty. She's hassling. I said, she's hassling because she's got 10 bottles that are machines right now. And then she's got 7 puppies on top of her. And I said, she's probably is hot. You know what I mean? All these things are going on to this female dog at once. And then they're going, where's the daddy dog? Is he in there with her? And I was like, no. I mean, you know, but it was like educating those people yes. that this yes. is how puppies are raised. And
yes.
mom got onto one of the puppies. I don't know what the puppy did while it was nursing. Maybe right. it had some teeth or whatever, right. but she got it. And they were yeah. like, why is she so? I said, mom is going to correct them, y'all. So when you get puppies home, they're looking for a correction also if they're doing something. Yes. And I said, that's a whole nother story there as far as we could take puppies home and they're babies, but they're misbehaving. Mm-hmm. Mom has already chewed them up. You know what I mean? Mm-hmm. I mean, I've seen mamas get onto them, you know.
Yeah.
But there's nothing you can do.
You're really right. And it's one of the things I try to explain to people when I talk about dog training. You know, people are really into the concept of purely positive dog training, and that's great. But that's not how dogs communicate.
Right. Right.
I promise you, it's not how dogs communicate.
And another thing, the mom or the pups are doing knee ear bumps. If you ever watch a dog, they'll do a bunch yep. of ear bumps. They'll pop yep. that ear up and they'll kind of, yep. not necessarily licking it, but they'll push the ear or nuzzle the ear. And mom was doing that to a lot of puppies. And they were going, why is she doing that to the puppies for? I said, that's a way of her communicating. She wants attention or affection. I said, I don't really know what she wants in this situation, but a lot of times when they do that, they want you to play or something. And mom did started playing with the puppies, wanted them to kind of jump on her head and mm-hmm. those type of things. And I said, we have to read a lot of body language into dogs. I said, they do a lot of body signals to each other, you know, more so than we think.
Yeah. And again, I think that is such an important communication when we talk to people both outside the dog world and even sometimes inside the dog world, I think, to be honest with you, because our best training starts with puppies in the box and it right. starts with the dam, and the dam corrects the puppies. Some of them more gently than others, but there yeah. are active corrections and active body language. And if we are careful and watch, we can learn dog communication skills by that interaction. And that's, to me, something that I think too often gets missed. And I love that we're getting that out, that the work you're doing is getting that out to the general public, because they definitely don't know.
Yeah. And another incident that happened, I just happened to think about this. She had 7 puppies. Well, she was feeding 4. Mm-hmm. 3 were behind her. Well, 3 were on the side and she was feeding 4. And then we were doing that one night and people were like, won't you feed the other 3? I said, she's in control of this, y'all. I mean, I've had big litters before and mom was almost like, quit touching my puppies. I got them in order while I want to feed them. You're messing up my system. Don't try to supplement feed them for me. I don't need your help. Mm-hmm. Because she was having 3 groups of 4 because she had 12. Mm-hmm. She raised all 12 by herself. And they
you
were
know,
just
and lucky you, that's a great dam. Because trust me, I've had litters of 12 that the dam was not smart enough to do that. And I had to do it. The constant rotation of 6 on, 6 off is like, wow, it's a lot when you don't have that kind of really good dam. And that is another part of the conversation. Different dogs handle things differently.
I mean, you would have thought people were going to call the Humane Society on me because she was feeding 6 and 1 was pinned behind her yeah. between her and the whelping box.
Right.
And
right.
she wasn't letting it feed, and people were just losing their mind about it. And I said, that's a big old boy. He's then ate his share, believe me. And she knows that.
Right.
And she's got him pinned over there because he will still be feeding right now and taking from the rest.
Yeah.
And I said, he's got him in timeout. You know what I mean? So
I love that.
It was just funny seeing people overreacting, like, why won't you feed that puppy? What is she doing? She's smushing him on the back, you know? And I'm like, no, she's got it under control. You know what I mean?
Right. But I love listener land. This is a beautiful opportunity to do this type of education. And just think if Bibi wasn't the only one doing it, right? Just think if we all had, and many of us have, I have what I call puppy spam cam, but that's right. On my social media. That's on Facebook. That's not for the world to see. And I think that your idea is absolute genius because you're not just talking to your 400 or 5,000 closest friends. You're talking right. to the whole world of YouTube. And I think that that is an area of outreach to the public that we as dog breeders have failed at. And I think it's actually one of the reasons, and I know God's going to strike me down with a lightning strike, that the doodle breeders have been successful. You know, people who are breeding in that community have been much more public facing and much more media savvy about how they present their dogs to the general world. They have been less closed off.
Yeah.
And I think that yours is an example that we can all learn from, you know.
And for example, the Britneys used to be called Britney Spaniels, where everyone was like, what kind of dog is it? Oh, this is a Britneys. No, they're called Britney Spaniels. And I'm like, no, they changed the name in the 1980s. It's actually just Britneys. But, you know, people still call them Britney Spaniels. So that's a big conversation every night is people are trying to call them Britney Spaniels. And, you know, it's not the end of the world if they do that. But that's an educational piece that's coming out. And then they go, how much do they weigh? The one I had weighed 90 pounds. And I'm like, oh, my Lord.
Oh my God. 90 pounds. What do you do with a 90-pound Britney? Oh, my God.
I said, they're supposed to be between, like, 30 and 40 pounds, maybe, you know what I mean? And, you know, unless they've overeaten a lot or something. And they were like, no, it was as big as my German short hair. And I was like, whoo. I mean, so you get those type of conversations,
sure.
too, on there,
sure.
you know, which Fair. Are great to Wait. Have and it's a great way to educate.
Think about it. Back in the day, we all had our dogs and we'd take them, walk them downtown, or we'd take them to the park. And so there was that interaction with the community. You know, with mm-hmm. just the average human. And everybody had a purebred dog and everybody did that. And that was very normal. And with the onset of some of the anti-breeder sentiment that exists, kind of started around, you know, maybe the turn of the century, around the 2000s time, really kind of came hot and heavy. People started hiding because they were afraid. And so my pitch it out to the universe is, don't be afraid. Be loud and proud, man. And take the strays and send them right back, right?
Yeah, I mean, I told you, I said, I had went and researched because I was just like mortified that someone was calling us a puppy mill. You know what I mean? And I was thinking like, oh my Lord. And I'm sitting there researching because I do a lot of data in my job anyway. So I was like going, oh man, every year we need 8 million puppies. Mm-hmm. Why can't these be purebred yep. puppies?
Yes.
Why do they have to be whatever's at the pound? Why can't we change that in our society?
Well, and I think that that is exactly the conversation I've had a number of times on the podcast. You know, based on the estimate of a percentage of the dogs, you know, there's like 85 million dogs, you know, extrapolation and math tells you that we need between 8 and 9 million replacement dogs a year. And the American Kennel Club registers like a million of those.
Yeah.
Where's the other ones coming from?
Right.
And how can we change that math? How can we change that calculus?
Yeah. You know, in the statistics I saw were there are 89 to 90 something million pets. Is that working dogs or is that just pets? Because right. that would be, that's a question I had. I didn't know if you knew the answer to
no,
that.
No, that's going to be just people have an animal in the household. And I believe that number is specifically dogs, not dogs and cats.
Yeah, yeah, it's just dogs. But
I think that's
I was
just wondering, dogs.
Like hunting dogs.
Yeah, but they don't differentiate. They don't, okay. They're not okay. that smart. okay. You know, the research is like, hey, do you want a dog? Yes. Okay, then it's a pet. Because okay. again, that's just that societal bias that people cannot imagine in our society today that people still hunt, right?
Right.
Like that in the world, that is we are esoteric for sure. And that's fine. That's fine. We're still doing what we do. But I think the bottom line is that the conversation around what a responsible breeder is, what a preservation dog breeder is, what we're doing, why we're doing it, and the additional conversation that is, we don't need fewer dog breeders. We need more good dog breeders.
Right.
And that's my part of the conversation. That's right. What I'm all about. And even if it's someone who is currently having puppies in a way that we don't think is up to our standards, why do we disrespect that person instead of encouraging them and giving them the tools to do it better?
Right. Yeah, I totally agree. That was one of the things that one of the comments I'd gotten was, you're adding to all these puppies being put into
populations.
Mm-hmm. And I'm like going, no, if you buy a pup from me and you have to surrender it or you change ownership, I have a contract that puppy comes to me.
That's right.
And there's no way. And he didn't know what to say that night. Yeah. That guy was, whoever it was that night, was stunned. They left. They didn't have another conversation. But that's why I told him. I said, no, the dog comes back to me. In the contract, it says that. Now, I can't control all that sometimes, but none of my puppies should ever go to a shelter.
Here's my solution to it, because my contract says the same thing. I'm down to my contract not saying much of anything except that, right? Like, I'm not super restrictive these days, but it does say that one thing. And the other thing that I do is I microchip the puppies before they leave, and my name is first on the microchip, period, and end of conversation. Because if that dog gets out, runs away, or, you know, the owners are in Europe and the pets that are, like, shit happens for real.
Yeah. And we must be,
I want to be the one that is contacted if that happens.
Well, as soon as my State Brittany Rescue gets a puppy, they normally contact me and go, do you know anybody? Do you know anybody about this? This dog isn't microchipped. I know it's not yours because you microchip all your dogs and your name is on the microchip. They're going, do you know who might have this type of dog? Mm-hmm. This is a liver Brittany. Who raises those in Georgia? And I'm like, I don't know. I'll look and see. And maybe let's research, see what litter it came from, you know, because they're trying to find who might have raised that puppy, you know, or bred the puppy. So, it's just surprising. It was so surprising, the hate it was.
Yeah. Well, I'm going to take that and flip it, because only thing I can do is that you met the hate with facts and information and knowledge and passion and love for your breed. And that is all we can do. Right. We can't fix everything. We can't fix everybody, but we can give them information. And so that's what I do. It's what you do. It's what we all do at some level. And my only suggestion and my ask, my throw down the gauntlet here on the pod today, is everybody, figure out a way to do that kind of education, because there's still a million of us. And if we're actually actively educating about not just our breed, but the entire concept of dog breeding and doing it loud and proud instead of hiding in the shadows, I believe that that has the ability to change the tide and change the conversation.
Well, I went on YouTube and looked who had done lives like that, and it was exactly what you said. The Labrapoodles, the Labradoodles, the Brittany Poos, all those, what they call designer
crossbreed
breeds.
Yep.
Those who are doing those lives. Yep. They're doing those lives, and they've got all these really cute puppies, and they're actually, if you went back and looked at the chat on some of those, they were giving prices on the live.
Yep.
You know, and I was just sitting there like, what? Wow. So.
But that's, again, education. Like, they're reaching people. They're selling dogs. Why is it that I know lots of people in purebred dog land right now who can't sell puppies from their last litter, and the purpose-bred dogs, crossbred dogs are flying off the shelf? There is a difference. And I've had this conversation multiple times with multiple people about communication, education, and not, what is it, hiding your light under a bushel?
Right. Exactly. I think that's exactly what happened here was my light opened up all of a sudden, and I was shocked that people were trying to put it out, you know, and I was just stunned, you know, because to some degree you're thinking you're doing, which I know I'm doing the right thing, but when people start calling you names and those type of things. And then you're going like, whoa, wait a minute, something's wrong. Yeah. We need to stand up a little bit.
Yeah, no, 100%. All right, BB, stand up, man. Stand up loud and proud. Appreciate you down there in Georgia.
Thank y'all.
As always, if you have any questions or input, we'd love to hear from you. The show notes and links to resources on today's topic are available at puredogtalk.com. Drop us a note in the comments or email to Laura at puredogtalk.com. Remember, guys, this podcast is for you. So if you want to know something, give me a holler. We'll do a podcast for you. If you wouldn't mind, you could help me out here. Take a couple minutes to visit iTunes and give us a review. The Dog Show Superintendents Association is a proud supporter of Pure Dog Talk. Our dog show superintendents are the hardworking people who make the dog show function. They are advocates for education and mentorship in the purebred dog fancy. So stop by the super's desk at your next show. Tell them how much you love Pure Dog Talk and give them a shout out for their support. That's all for today. Thank you for joining us on Pure Dog Talk.